It's time for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783 to become part of tonight's show.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment in financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years,
we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783, that's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will, what's a living will. And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the Certified Financial Planner.
It's the certified financial planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the certified financial planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it? And if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities.
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out of towners, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Investments offered through HBEC Inc. Investment advice offered through Lewis Financial Management, HBEC Inc. and Lewis Financial Management are not related entities.
Well, hello, Doug. This is Deborah.
Wow, Deborah, Linda, what a heat wave we are having here.
Yeah, look like we're going to get a storm or two tonight.
Yeah, and I think I heard that within the last couple of days, we might have broken some heat records, all-time records.
Absolutely. I think 105 and a heat index of up to 115.
Wow. Well, it'd be nice if the stock market was having the same records.
Breaking records, right. Well, actually, there has been some good news in the Wall Street Journal. I think with the end of the year, you should probably give us an update on how things have ended our first 6 months.
The first 6 months just finished, and a lot of people are surprised. With all the doom and gloom that the year began with and everything, and then throughout the first few months, what's going to happen with Greece? And yet, here we are halfway through the year, and the S&P is up 8%. I mean, who knows if it'll do another 8 by the end of the year, but the S&P 500 is up 8% for the first half of the year. That's tremendous. And the smaller companies on the NASDAQ are even doing better. I mean, the NASDAQ is up 12%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And even the Dow Jones, 5% for the year, for the first 6 months of the year. That's nothing to be ashamed of. It's all really good news, but you wouldn't know it if you just listened to all the media volatility that's going around.
Well, if you're able to turn that media volatility out, where do you think what do you think the reason is? Is it compared to maybe some of the things happening overseas?
Yeah, I think that negative news sells. Nobody is going to listen to, by the way, you know, your next door neighbor gave a very nice birthday party for all of the neighborhood kids and everything. That's not going to get a lot of attention.
Okay, yeah, I see where you're going with this. Okay.
All right, so negative news sells and shock news sells.
Even more.
Shock negativism. Mm-hmm. And here we are. Fighting, you know, there's a lot of bad stories in terms of profitability in advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
Radio is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers are suffering.
Right.
Advertisers are just not willing to go ahead and pay what they were before because of the internet,
mm-hmm,
and so on. So negative news is being thrown at us more and more and more. And then, of course, we have the presidential election coming up.
Some cyclical upset or media volatility, just because an election always produces that sort of.
That's right, and that's the way the presidential campaigns are put forward, to throw as much mud as you can, mm-hmm, against the other, and that is very nice negative publicity. Negative publicity translates to media volatility. Media volatility being promoted causes those who speculate in the market, which, of course, at Lewis Financial Management, we do not.
Right.
But those who speculate, they're being batted left and right and left and right. And then you throw in computerized trading.
Right.
And it's going to be just as volatile for the second half of the year. However, underneath all of the media volatility, there are some very good signs.
And those are the fundamentals. Those are the fundamentals of good companies, good people at the helms of good companies, good money managers, people who definitely know what companies are making money, keeping good balance sheets.
Yes, yes. The underlying fundamentals of many of these companies, very strong. They got scared in 2008, so they've accumulated a huge amount of cash because they're fearful something else might happen in the future, but that mm-hmm. makes it good for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe dividends are down a little bit, but they're still profitable.
Mm-hmm.
There's good news out there. And if you are one who is not a technical analyst or a technician or one or in favor of technical analysis, mm-hmm. but if you're one who is following fundamental analysis and fundamental analyst, as we do at Lewis Financial Management, then definitely things are looking very good.
And I think that's true that, you know, while there's a lot of uncertainty maybe in the political world internationally, I think it is forcing a lot of people to realize that it's American companies, U.S. companies. These are the good buys. These are the places to really place your money. And those money managers, I think, are doing that.
Yeah. You know, there was a very interesting article in The Wall Street Journal that brought a phrase that I had not heard very much of. It's called Ulysses contracts that some financial planners, I don't know, did you hear about that?
Well, I know who Ulysses is.
Who was Ulysses?
Wasn't he in the Odyssey or the Iliad where he was on a boat.
He was on a boat, right. All right.
And took a really long ride.
Except that as he was approaching an area where there were sirens.
Oh, yes. When he was going to go by the... Yes, there was a temptation,
yes.
And if you listened to them, they would draw you into the waters where you could crash.
And you would
kind of like the Outer Banks.
Well, hopefully it's not like the stock market crash, because the Ulysses contracts, which some financial planners are actually having their clients sign, because what happened with Ulysses was, knowing that the sirens were going to be in his future,
right?
He had his crew tie him down
right.
so he could resist the siren's deadly song.
That's right.
And there are these policy statements that some financial planners are having their clients sign, similar to, they're called
Ulysses contracts. I see.
In other words, you promise that
right.
you will not, when things right. get rough, you will not go ahead
right.
and bail out.
And at the very least, it will remind you as the investor that as there's all this media volatility and all of these things where you might be tempted to change where you're what your fundamental goal is, to get you to financial independence.
Well, it was only about 3 or 4 weeks ago that clients were calling my office concerned the world was coming to an end as soon as Greece pulled out of the euro.
Right,
I mean, it was
right.
like, you know, and I had to just calm them down.
Right.
You know, we've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
Things will work out
mm-hmm.
as they always do.
Mm-hmm.
But there are companies underneath that are solid, that will make money, whether Greece is in or out, whether Spain is in or out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good year we're having so far.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it if you listen to Fox News
or just the negative news. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, if you have any questions, please do give us a call. Our number is 919-860-9783. Call us on the open lines, 919-860-9783. Well, there was an article in the world of financial planning, and I really liked it. It was entitled, Five Reasons to Consider Hiring a Financial Advisor. And I'm always looking for, easy articles to point people to as to what other people are reading and writing about
mm-hmm.
in the world of financial planning, because we're not the only voice out there, and we're not the only person who they often hear why they need a financial advisor, a financial planner, and why we're a little bit different than someone who you would just go to for one particular kind of advice,
mm-hmm.
much more all-inclusive. And one of the things that they began with was that many people have sort of boiled it down to five good reasons for hiring a financial advisor.
Yeah, that article, if I'm not mistaken, came from U.S. News and World Report. And those five reasons were very solid reasons. The first reason was the reason to hire a financial advisor was that you have minor children and no written provisions for their care in the event that you or your spouse die.
And that's a big one.
That's a big one, yeah. Having a professional nag regarding your financial affairs might be just what you need to justify the fees of a financial advisor. So I think that was a very good number one. You've got minor children and you have no written provisions for their care in the event that you or your spouse die.
Number two was you make your 401k choices based on the top performing plan choices from the prior quarter. And when you hire a financial advisor, I think that's the biggest thing that someone can really give you is a much more long-term view on how the performance is, you know, of any of your investments has been.
I've been really pleased recently with the younger clients that are coming to us for financial advice from Glaxo and IBM. We used to only see financial planning clients in their late 50s, early 60s, and so forth. And here, these ones are coming in their 40s and everything. But when I look at their 401ks and I ask them, well, why did you make this choice? Or why do you have these? It's almost as if they threw a dart and they just took random choices and everything. But the second reason for hiring a financial advisor is really just, I think, just that. That you shouldn't be making choices on the basis of what happened last quarter. I like to look at, first of all, managers. If we're just going to have one of these target date funds, I think those are, I don't want to say too bad things on the air, but I just don't like them because we need to see a manager and a track record of a manager and not over the last quarter.
A real person's ability to pick stocks and bonds and have a real readable performance track record that we can look at and say how well that person has done.
Yeah, not just what happened last quarter, but what happened last year and the year before and the year before. Let's have maybe a 15-year track record. But the second reason was just that, in that article, was that people make 401k choices based on the top performing plan from the previous quarter.
Yeah. I think the third one is probably the biggest reason why people call is into our office. And they said, I really need a financial plan. They will often say to me, I really need a financial planner because my financial goals are just really sort of a vague hope that one day I'll get there. And retirement is sort of just a word. I know I need to be able to support myself, but I need some real help fine-tuning a plan. I need to come up with some action items on getting there.
You know, a comfortable retirement or the desire to pay for 4 years of college for your children, they may be admirable aspirations, but they're not goals unless they're quantified and they have a time frame attached to them. Furthermore, you'll need to track progress against these goals over time and devise savings and investing strategies to meet these goals. But if you're not able to do it yourself or you don't want to devote the time to do it, then you should definitely consider hiring a financial planner.
Yeah, we had recently had someone come in and actually see us, and you'll know who I'm talking about. And while he's a professional, even in the investment world, in the financial world, was just very happy to pay for a professional second opinion. And that, I think, is a lot of putting that financial goal into reality. Let me hire a professional financial planner to help me formalize my real retirement plan.
I respected him very much because he had been in the profession doing it himself at the institutional level for maybe 15 years or more, as I recall. But I really respected his realization that he needs a planner.
Right.
Now, the fourth reason, as I recall from that article, was that people's investment portfolio really is just a collection of accounts and holdings with no rhyme or reason. It's what I might call financial clutter. There's just a mishmash of all kinds of stuff, but there's no plan. There's no asset allocation model. There's no goal, approach, and monitoring of it, and so forth.
I think we see this frequently. While they might have done a very good job in accumulating, and now they have something to work with, which is outstanding. You save enough money, and even if it's just cash, it's cash, and you can now invest it properly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do have that mishmash of stuff, it tends to make you feel like the whole financial planning process is overwhelming, and how do I get started? And at the very least, if you meet with a financial planner, you'll at least be able to itemize those things out properly, get a good sense of what your real financial statement looks like. And the fifth, I think, let's see here, it was, if you're capable of handling your own finances, you just might not have ever gotten around to it. And so, hiring a financial planner to do what you possibly could be able to do for yourself might really just be worth the time.
You know, Debs, I have several clients who are intellectually capable of handling their financial planning and investment needs. And in some cases, they're just too busy with their careers and families to focus sufficient attention here. Then I have others that like the idea of an independent view of their situation. And then there are others who just are not really enjoying it. It's not something they really get up in the morning enjoying. But your financial future is too important to put on the back burner. So I liked the article, Five Reasons That You Should Hire a Financial Planner. And I think a lot of news out there is negative. This was a very positive article.
I thought so, too. And if this has made you think that you might want to call and ask about your financial situation, please give us a call on the open lines. That's 919-860-9783.
You know, I don't think we've announced our website address again so
far. Oh, yeah,
www.dougandlinda.com. That's right, dougandlinda.com. That's a nice and easy one to remember. And we're really happy. There you can see a video of us in the action of financial planning. You can listen to past programs and so forth.
Well, in the world of, real estate and the housing market and, what is your sense? That things are moving up or staying the same?
Actually, a lot of people are looking for the good news in the real estate market, and they're just assuming that those who have the $1 million and the multi-million dollar homes are not in trouble. But there was an article in Yahoo Finance which was really shocking. The headline of the article was $1 million foreclosures. And they picked up a person called Buchanan, the Buchanan's $2 million home. But what was interesting about that article was that although millions of Americans are facing foreclosure, most people aren't realizing that the $2 million and above homes are a huge number of foreclosures that are in the pipeline.
So with that many people in the same straits, that even people who are making less money, having less valued homes, sounds like it's a pretty fundamental issue. If you have too much home and you lose your job, you're just as likely to go through the foreclosure process.
Yeah, for years, homeowners at the high end of the housing market were able to postpone the foreclosure process. But now multi-million dollar homes are becoming more commonplace in America's foreclosure pipeline. In fact, America's wealthiest families are now losing their homes to foreclosure at a faster rate than the rest of the country. And I think I saw that out of all the foreclosure activity, the multi-million dollar properties, the foreclosures on them have jumped by 273% since 2007.
Wow.
I mean, they're coming fast and furious.
Wow. Well, when someone thinks of a house as an investment or a savings account, how is this thinking wrong, or how does it affect, thinking of that asset as your home, as an asset, an investment, I guess I should call it.
Yeah, because we hear it a lot, Deborah. We hear it a lot. People talk about their home as an investment. And this particular couple that they picked on in the article, they're going through a bankruptcy filing. And as part of the bankruptcy filing, they have agreed to sell their home and hand over all the remaining assets to the lender. But the sad quote in the article was, he said, we had a lot of our savings tied up in the house and we'll end up losing all of that. It's like, hey, didn't anybody ever advise you? You don't put your savings in your home. Your home is a use asset. You know, I've enjoyed recently trying to clarify in our office all items on a financial statement will either be assets or liabilities, right?
Correct.
What are assets?
Things you own.
What are liabilities?
Things you owe.
Okay. But all assets are broken into one of two categories. What are those two categories of assets?
Well, the broadest categories are going to be investment assets, mm-hmm. things you own, to be an investment.
Right.
And then they're going to be use assets.
Right.
Things you own to use.
Right. And to many people, when you talk about their Maserati or their 1950 Chevy, they'll talk about that as a great investment. It's not an investment. It's a use asset. And when they come to their home, they talk about it as a great investment. I'm saving up my home. It's where I'm building my retirement. It's not an investment. It is a use asset. And so this is the big mistake that they made. These folks here, they considered their home as an investment, and they tied up all their savings in it. And that was very, very, I mean, and we hear it a lot. So many people come to us and we see the same thing, that they have confused use assets with investment assets. Homes are not investments.
Wow. And I think that's common no matter what income level and what size house you have. Well, let's see. What else is in the world of financial plan? Or actually, I think we have a caller.
Well, Doris, this is Doug Lewis, certified financial planner. How can I help you?
I have a house, and it has quite a large mortgage.
Okay. How big is the mortgage?
$231.
Okay.
The problem is it isn't selling, and I want to move away. I've considered a charitable remainder trust, but I have been told by a CPA that that would mean that I would have to put $231 in cash and the house into such a trust.
Well, no, he's not exactly correct. What you have to do is you pay off the mortgage first. You can't transfer a mortgaged property into a charitable trust, but there are ways around that. But he's right. You have to pay off the trust, the mortgage first, then transfer it in. How much do you have in liquid assets altogether? All of your other assets that are liquid?
It's around $800,000.
And what would the house sell for under a fire sale if there was no mortgage?
Maybe $270,000.
Okay. Number one, we need to move about $450,000 of your liquid assets into mutual funds. They can be very safe, conservative mutual funds. We can put those mutual funds in street name through a brokerage account, and you can immediately write a check for $230,000 against them. You are basically borrowing from yourself, no application, no suitability, no anything. You take that $231,000 and you pay off the mortgage. You transfer the house, which is now mortgage-free, into a charitable remainder unit trust. You let the trust go ahead and sell the property immediately for as long as little as it, whatever it will bring. If it brings $275,000, that's wonderful. If it brings $275,000, then you have it start paying you back immediately. It pays you back monthly, and it can pay you back because all that cash will be sitting in the trust. That $275,000 sitting in the trust can go ahead and pay you maybe $24,000 a year or $2,000 a month. That money, as it comes back to you immediately, can be used to go right back over to your margin account at your against your mutual funds. In the meantime, your mutual funds will also be producing income for you to live on. And finally, the capital gains will not be an issue because you will be given a charitable deduction of about $70,000 for making the transfer of the property into the charitable trust.
I'll make an appointment so I can come and see you.
All right. It can all be done, though. Thanks, Doris.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Doris. All right. That number to call is 8727000, 8727000 if you're in the Raleigh area. And we'd like to thank you for joining us on Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis.
Wow, Doug, that's an interesting call.
Yeah. You know, Doris's situation is, it's not that strange if you think about it. Most people that have real estate of some sort, they have two perspectives, if you will. One is the amount that they owe on it.
Okay.
Most people have some sort of a mortgage. Others are facing capital gains taxes if they sell it.
Oh.
And so they don't know how to get out of this thing. And of course, we have talked for many, many years on how to sell real estate tax-free. We've talked about it on the air for probably close to 20 years now. We have done many, many of these in our office. But right away, to avoid the capital gains tax by means of putting real estate in a charitable trust and then letting it be sold from there with no tax, you run into the first provision of, well, what about the mortgage? Can that go with the house or the land into the charitable trust? And the answer is no.
Right.
The one provision, or one of the several provisions of charitable trust, are they cannot have any asset with debt on them.
Okay.
So then the question is, well, just as I told Doris, how do you have your cake and eat it too? In her case, it's really nice. I think, what did she say? She had $800,000 of investments. Okay. That's nice. Because then if you take a certain number of your investments and move them into a brokerage account.
Okay.
You haven't liquidated them.
I see.
Let's say you've got $500,000 of mutual funds that you're willing to put into a brokerage account. Well, you haven't liquidated them. You can now borrow against them, but you haven't liquidated. So you borrow against your own funds. You take that money and send it to the mortgage holder, the bank, and now your home is debt-free.
We've used this strategy.
Then, after it's debt-free, then you can give it to the charitable trust. Now, the trust can then turn around and sell it and avoid all capital gains taxes. And as the income comes out of that charitable trust, you know what you do with it?
Send it back to the brokerage account.
Where the mutual funds are held.
Being held.
And it turns out a win-win-win situation.
Wow, that's fantastic.
This is a very nice strategy, and it doesn't work for everybody, but it works for a lot of people, and it really turns what looked like lemon into lemonade.
Wow.
Even if a home or a piece of property is underwater, if the debt is more than the value, if you can get the debt paid off this way, then you can sell it for anything you want, because it all is going to end up in the trust paying back to you. It's a nice strategy,
and it really is.
I hope Doris calls the office.
Right. Wow.
Well, Doug, basically, what are the areas that financial planning covers?
Well, you should know
what
that
are the seven areas of planning.
I'm going to let you tell me.
All right. Aren't the seven areas of planning cash flow planning?
That's number one.
Tax planning.
Very good. Number two.
Insurance planning.
That's number three.
Investment planning.
That's number four.
Retirement planning.
Number five.
Estate planning.
Number six.
And the last one is educational planning.
That's number seven. Those are the seven areas of financial planning: cash flow planning, tax planning, insurance planning, investment planning, retirement planning, estate planning, and educational planning.
So that covers all the areas of planning that one should have addressed in their situation.
Right. And those are areas that we see the headlines about in the week, every week, in one of those seven areas.
Use a financial planner, and specifically check out the credentials of the planner that you use. And if you have any questions locally, you can call us at the office at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Wow. Well, in the world of estate planning, there is a article that caught my eye, and I had both of you read it, and it was entitled, "Planning is a Four-Letter Word on the Farm."
Yeah, most farmers, Deborah, don't shut down their tractors at age 65 and hand over the keys to the chicken coop, move on to improve their golf game. Instead, what you see is they can be found on their farms well into their 70s or 80s, tending the land that they love.
And I think a lot of people just plan, that the problem is that many fail to plan for the day that they will no longer be able to work their farms.
Yeah, there's 2 million family farmers in the U.S. right now, and they have basically unique estate planning issues, which if they ignore it, these can result in the farm being split up among different owners or having to be sold outright to pay off estate taxes or creditors. So unfortunately, family farmers who need financial planning are notoriously bad planners.
And I think many times the older generation tells their kids, oh, one day this will all be yours, but they don't ever put anything in writing.
Oh my goodness, isn't that
sad? And then there's never really anything, no real plan on what to do.
That's right, that's right. You know, although many of the challenges which farmers face in estate planning are the same ones encountered by the owners of other types of small businesses, they can really be exacerbated by the strong emotional ties that lifelong farmers have to the land.
Yeah, and I think we are especially susceptible to that sort of a feeling and sentiment in this part of the world, in this part of the country, and in our state. I mean, I'm thinking of two families who we know, you know, specifically that we've helped with farms. And yeah. I think it's like passing on a family business is, you know, just like in other areas of enterprise. But it goes further than that because the owner has, you know, been putting in their blood, sweat, and tears for years.
Yeah, farming in North Carolina is not a small matter, but the lack of planning by farmers is a huge issue. And it's sometimes a challenge to get farmers, as they get older, to give up the reins. And so you need to approach it. The financial planner needs to approach it with a team, which includes the advisor, then maybe an estate attorney or an estate planning attorney, an accountant, maybe an insurance expert. And then we need to have a meeting where we try and help the family understand what options are available to them. Are the children really interested in taking
right
the farm? In some cases, right. The parents may think they are, but right. They are not.
Right. And I don't know if this is a generalization, but I think most aren't. But farmers definitely need to think about, you know, selling the farm or passing the farm on to an heir if they are interested, or a child if they are interested. But sort of look at it like it's a retirement plan.
Right.
You know, really needing to have a plan on how do I pay for this retirement, these retirement years. If this is your situation, please give us a call. Our phone number is 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783.
You know, after taking this first step of a family meeting to identify whether there really is someone, a child, who wants to take over running the farm and is willing and able to invest in the venture, then if there is, then the advising team, mainly the financial planner, this is of course what we have done for so many years, crafts a plan, designs a plan that allows for the person to inherit the farm while still providing an inheritance for the rest of the family. And every family is different. Maybe one of the children wants it. Well, that's going to be, and maybe it's 60% of the entire estate. Well, you have to accommodate both pieces of it. How do you make the other children get their estate, and how do you pass on this one? If the farmer gifts one son the farm, then maybe a life insurance benefit could be left for the siblings to offset the value of what would have been their share of the farm.
I think farmers also need to consider how to structure their farm business to make the transition to the next generation easy.
Transition is the crucial issue, Deborah. It really is. And unfortunately, it's really lacking. Farmers very often feel, well, we'll just keep working until mm-hmm. we can't work and everything will work out fine.
Yeah, I'm thinking of two of the estate planning attorneys or a few of the estate planning attorneys that we work with that will actually, in helping go through this process with us and our clients, help with things like, does the property need to be redeeded? Is it made up of several pieces? You know, all of the issues that need to come into, you know, how do we handle this?
Also, as far as income, retirement income, many farmers haven't planned for that properly either. They typically try to reduce their income, pay their tax bills by buying equipment, depreciating that over the years, but very few of them see the need for some sort of a pension type of retirement plan. And boy, I remember one I saw years ago. They came to me and they had a whole bunch of farm property. Was about a $10 million estate, as I recall, and I could not get them financially independent. None of the numbers would work just because of the dynamics of the family. So the bottom line is, planning doesn't need to be a four-letter word for farmers.
All right. Well, let's see. What else do we have? Well, I thought this was a good article, just talking about some of the things that can go wrong in a retiree's life or an elderly person's life. And there's definitely been a lot more information out there given to the public about some of the scams that are targeting elderly and how those scams are growing.
Yeah, it's sort of surprising that this is becoming more and more newsworthy. Scams, frauds, financial exploitation schemes, they're targeting older Americans, and it's becoming a growing multi-billion dollar industry. The elder financial abuse encompasses a range of tactics. Some of these are perpetrated, shockingly, right, by relatives.
Yeah.
Some of them by trusted advisors. We've seen some financial advisors who have hit the news recently.
Right.
I think, Mr. Madoff's brother just confess?
Yeah.
So we have relatives, we have trusted advisors, some by strangers via telemarketing, and even internet-based scams, and they're targeting the elderly.
And I think even as much as 5% of Americans 60 and older have been victims of some of these scams. And that's just, astounding that it happens usually from people who are known by the person.
If you think about it, many of the elderly are relatively isolated, Deborah, and susceptible to overtures from seemingly friendly strangers. That's why,
so much of this is possible.
Yeah, and telemarketing scams are so successful.
Well, Doug, I think we have a caller.
Let's take our caller, and then we'll come back to this matter of the scams for the elderly.
Hello?
Hello, Kevin, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you this evening?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm kind of in I won't say a unique position, but I do have a few questions. I'm in the middle of my career. I work in healthcare, I recently completed my master's degree. And we have a pretty limited retirement savings at this point, I had to actually borrow from my 401k to pursue my graduate degree, and my wife's 401k is untouched at this point, and we do have some savings, but I'm wondering really what the best options would be to consider with regard to retirement. And if I could add to that, I also have, we have one girl that's through college at Chapel Hill, but we've got a couple more to go.
Kevin, let me get a couple of facts so I can see what you look like. How old are you?
47.
You're 47. And your wife?
She's 39.
All right. So y'all are relatively young still. And you say that you're both working. You both have 401ks. What's your income?
My income is about 140.
140. And your wife's income?
Currently it's about 90, but that's probably going to drop down to about 60. She's going to start working a little less.
All right. So it looks like you're going to have about a $200,000 family income. Now, what have you accumulated in your investment portfolios thus far in dollars approximately?
I'd say probably about $125,000.
And the $125,000, what is that in retirement funds or non-retirement?
It's in retirement funds solely. We don't have any like stock portfolio or anything like that.
So you've accumulated nothing so far in what we call personal or non-qualified investments.
Well, I'm not sure. We're about halfway through a 30-year mortgage on a home. It's probably market value.
Okay. Yeah, you must have tuned in recently because the first part of our show, we spent a lot of time talking about how a home is never an investment.
Ah,
yeah.
So thank you for making that point for us that a lot of people do think that their home is an investment.
Yeah. Your home is not an investment. It is a use asset. It's an asset that you purchased for the use of it. You need a roof over your head. So assets are either investment assets or use assets. Homes are not investment assets.
I see.
Okay. So you have no non-retirement assets so far.
I guess so, yeah.
All right. And how long have you been working, Kevin?
Let's see. Gosh. Since 1989.
Over 20 years, and you've accumulated nothing. That's sort of scary.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, now you said you even borrowed against your 401k. That's sort of like one of the things you never, ever do. Why did you borrow against your 401k?
Well, I did that because we were in a situation where we thought we weren't going to be able to use any of our savings at all because there was a potential situation with a family member who was having some health problems. And so I decided to hedge my bet and do that. But I didn't really take very much from my 401k at all.
Yeah. Okay. So you apparently, it sounds to me like y'all might be, and all clients fall into certain categories. It sounds like you're probably the type of clients that spend everything you make and there's not too much leftover surplus at the end of the month.
Yeah, I mean, we have a small savings, but I would say we probably do fit into that category.
Okay, all right. And the beginning of a solution is the recognition that there's a problem.
Sure.
Okay, so I would say, first of all, you need to get some help. You need professional help. If you'd like to call my office, you can speak to my daughter, Deborah, or you can speak to one of my staff members and schedule a meeting to meet with me. But I can give you a couple pointers over the air.
Okay.
The first thing is, you need to look at your expenses as categorized. Now, when I say categorized expenses, there are three basic categories of expenses. Number one is the recurring expense, the recurring monthly expenses. And these may not be fixed, but they are recurring, like how many times you take your wife out to dinner in a month. And in addition to the fixed ones like mortgaging costs and so forth, but your RMEs, we call them RME, recurring monthly expenses. That's a crucial number. The second thing we need to find out is what's your recurring income? And that's pretty easy. We can go ahead and find out what your recurring gross income. Now, are you contributing to your 401ks?
Yes, I am.
How much are you contributing?
I end up contributing about $500 a month at this point, and my employer is matching.
All right, so you're not contributing more than what they're matching?
I am not at this point. No.
Good. No, that's good. You should not.
Okay.
You should never contribute more than the match. So once we get your RMEs and your recurring monthly income, we need to hone in on how to build an investment plan. We call it a pay-yourself-first investment plan. But if you look at your expenses, because you're making $200,000, actually you're making $230,000 right now. Your wife's going to drop.
Right.
So I'm sure a lot of our listeners would say, what? $230,000, a $250,000 a year, and they're spending everything they make, and they're borrowing from their retirement. What's wrong with these people?
I agree.
Okay, I'm not saying that, but I'm sure that there are people out there, and the solution is there. You just need some professional help in looking at what we call cash flow planning first. And then from cash flow planning, we build an automatic investment plan and we see how long it will take before you can be financially independent. It is not at all impossible. If you call my office during the week, you can go on our website, go to dougandlinda.com. That's dougandlinda.com. And you can see how we approach it. You can see a video and some calls, and you can see some a number of things. But call my office, speak to Deborah, and she'll schedule an appointment to meet with me.
Our number is 919-872-7000.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Kevin. Looking forward to meeting with y'all.
Thanks very much.
All right. All right, I think we have somebody else on hold. Let's see, who's on hold now? Joyce, is that you? This is Doug Lewis. All right, okay, let me see. Hold on, let's see. Let me get myself organized here. Everything's collapsing in front of me, the calculator.
All right, well, let's take an archived call.
All right, let's go ahead and take a call from the archives, and then we'll comment a little bit. Let's take John's call.
Let's take another call, Doug.
Joyce, are you there? How can I help you? This is Doug Lewis.
Hi, Mr. Lewis. My question is this. If you have the funds to pay a vehicle off, would it still be profitable to go ahead and put the money in the bank and let that draw interest or pay cash for it or run it through a lease? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Let's walk through it slowly, Joyce.
Okay.
You're saying if you have the money to pay off a car, I guess you mean a car loan.
Where we're in business. And we have a lot of equipment. Well, what we've done is put the money in the bank, although we're still leasing it. Would it be better just to go on and totally pay all those vehicles off and have them debt-free?
Now, wait a minute. Hold. You said you're leasing the cars. There's no debt if you're leasing them.
Well, it's a lease with a dollar in buyout.
All right. So you're not buying the cars. You're leasing them.
Correct. Would it be better to go ahead and pay them off and get out of the leases now, or go ahead and fulfill the end of the lease?
Well, what's the dollar payoff?
A dollar.
No, but I mean, if you pay them off now ahead of time, do you save anything?
You would save the interest that's accumulating. Isn't that right, Ryan?
Well, no, on a lease, there is no interest. On a lease, you're paying lease payments. I think you're confusing purchasing on time versus leasing.
I think I am also.
In other words, let's say you buy yourself a Lincoln and put it in the company's name, and you're paying for it over time. All right, well, you've got a down payment, and you're making principal and interest payments. And if you pay off that note ahead of time, then you stop the interest payments.
Okay. Let's go to another one right quick. Well, so I don't run out of time. If you're going to buy a house, let's go this route. It's basically the same question I'm asking.
All right.
If you're going to buy a house and you have the funds available to pay the house off and pay cash for it.
Right.
Would it be more profitable to put the money in the bank, let it draw the interest, and get your benefits from the government, you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Your taxes. Or to pay the house off as you go into it.
Okay, well, I think you confused the two issues. Let's straighten them out because it's a good question. I think your question is, should you pay cash for your house or finance it?
Mm-hmm.
Is that your question?
My question is, should you pay cash for everything and not have any finances, any borrowed money whatsoever, is what I'm trying to get to.
Right. Well, it depends on your situation. Do you have high or low taxes?
High taxes right now.
If you have high taxes, and if you purchase a home for cash, then you hurt yourself in two ways. Number one, you're not allowed any tax deduction for buying the house for cash, and you're not allowed any tax deduction for making your payments as you go along because there are no payments. And under the present tax laws, the only two real benefits to you to help you reduce your taxes significantly at all are home mortgage interest, and charitable contributions.
Okay.
So if you want to go ahead and reduce your taxes, that makes a plus for financing your home and making the principal and interest payments over the next 30 years or whatever, and then you get a deduction. That does something else for you on the financial side. It frees up cash to be invested somewhere else to also pay the mortgage or accumulate for retirement. Now, having said all that, if you are in a low tax bracket and you don't need tax reduction, and if you have a hard time making ends meet, then for comfort, it'd be to your benefit to go ahead and pay cash for the house. What kind of income do y'all make?
$175,000+.
Well, if you make $175,000, are your living expenses below $175,000?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have any you wouldn't have any problem making mortgage payments.
Yeah.
All right. If you wouldn't have any problem making mortgage payments, then you get a double whammy by financing the house. Number one, part of your mortgage payments every month, about one third, are paid for by Uncle Sam. About one third of every payment you make on your mortgage payments are going to be taken off of your taxes at the end of the year when you run the computations. And the other thing is, let's say you have a $175,000 home or a $200,000 home, you get and you put $20,000 down and finance $160,000, that leaves $180,000 to put into a nice safe investment that's also compounding for you for your retirement. And then when you go ahead and start and take retirement, that's the time to, when your income drops, to pay off the house then.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
I do, but I needed to hear it.
Oh, that's exactly the way you go. As far as the car, it's a similar situation, except that if it's owned by the business, is the business a Schedule C or is it a corporation?
Schedule C.
If it's a Schedule C on your personal return, then what I would do on your car is I would have a home equity line against your home and buy the car by letting the interest buy the car with the home equity line. That way you get a double whammy also. All your financing payments that you normally pay to buy the car with and get no deduction, now they're deductible, the interest portion, also on your taxes because they're going against your home equity line.
If I can provide any more information for you, you can call the office at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. We're here in Raleigh. I'll be happy to either send you some information or see what we can do to answer any more questions that you might have.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You're sure welcome, Joyce. Call again. I'm glad you're listening.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that's all the Money Matters we have time for today. So we want to thank all our listeners for joining us. And for any other questions you may have, call my office during the week and we'll set up an appointment to meet with you personally. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And we'll be back next week on this same station at the same time. In the meantime, have a great week. And remember, your money matters because your financial future is at stake.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.